From WAMC in Albany, this is the Legislative Gazette, a weekly magazine about New York State government and politics. Your host is David Gustina, with political commentary by Dr. Alan Shartok, political scientist and professor emeritus at the University at Albany. Statewide distribution for the Legislative Gazette is made possible by New York State United Teachers, representing professionals in education and healthcare, online at nysut.org.
Coming up this week, Governor Cuomo denies that he's feeling defensive about the widening federal probe of his administration's economic development projects. Our political observer Alan Shartok shares his thoughts on this week's school budget votes, which were overwhelmingly approved statewide. And the state is awarding $1 million each to three colleges whose student-led teams won a competition to develop clean energy plans. Those stories and more on the Legislative Gazette. Governor Andrew Cuomo says a key vote on the next installment of the Buffalo Billion Project is merely postponed, not canceled, and he denies that he's feeling defensive about the widening federal probe of his administration's economic development projects. The Legislative Gazette's Karen DeWitt reports.
Governor Cuomo initially said he didn't know what clients his former top aide, Joe Prococo, might have represented while Prococo was off the state payroll for 6 months in 2014 managing the governor's reelection campaign.
I knew he might be accepting consulting arrangements with other companies, but beyond that, no.
A day or two later, the State Ethics Commission released Prococo's financial disclosure forms, which had been filed in May of 2015, about a year ago. Prococo said he received up to $125,000 for consulting work from two companies, Clough Harbor Associates and Core Development. Both also hold key contracts on state economic development projects and are among Governor Andrew Cuomo's top contributors. Prococo has not been accused of any wrongdoing, and it's unclear whether any laws have been broken, since it's legal to consult for clients with business before state government, as long as when Prococo reentered state service, he did not have direct dealings with those issues. It's not known exactly what kind of consultation that Prococo provided. Governor Cuomo, in his second public appearance since the news of the subpoenas from the U.S. attorney broke in late April, told reporters it would be unrealistic for a manager to know all of the private business dealings of his aides.
The state has tens of thousands of employees. They're not supposed to be cross-examined to make sure they're following the rules, right? The way this works is, there are laws and there are regulations and there are rules, and you are expected to follow the rules.
But it turns out that if you're one of the state employees who works in the governor's top inner circle, you are essentially cross-examined. As reported in Politico New York, there is a second way, other than the state ethics board, for a curious chief executive to find out if his top aides represented outside clients that might pose a potential conflict of interest. Top assistants to the governor are routinely vetted in a process that includes details about income sources. The governor's top counsel, Alfonso David, confirms in a statement that new employees fill out financial disclosure documents and also undergo state police background checks. David says the process also applied to Prococo, but the governor's counsel says he can't release any of those documents while the federal probe, as well as an investigation ordered by Governor Cuomo himself, are completed.
Well, we don't know the whole story.
Blair Horner with the New York Public Interest Research Group says there's no way of knowing whether Prococo's rehiring forms were actually viewed by the governor or other top aides around him. But he says there's a much simpler way to have determined if any conflicts existed.
You could have asked. We're in this intense environment where the legislative leaders have now gone to prison or are looking at prison time. There have been dozens of elected officials that have been kicked out of office. The former comptroller of New York State was kicked out of office. This should be as extremely sensitive an issue for top-ranking public officials as anything you could imagine, which is how do you deal with potential conflicts of interest and how do you raise the ethics bar?
Horner says in the remaining months of the legislative session, the governor and legislature should take steps to address some of these potential conflicts. But he says so far the response to all of the corruption has been tepid. In Albany, I'm Karen DeWitt.
Joining us now, Legislative Gazette political observer Alan Chartok. Well, Alan, this week, Governor Andrew Cuomo defended his economic development disbursement and spoke about the head of SUNY Poly, Elaine Calieros, asked if he was comfortable with SUNY Polytechnic Institute founding president continuing to oversee upstate nanotech economic development at SUNY Poly as it's investigated by federal and state authorities. Governor Andrew Cuomo urged reporters not to rush to judgment. These are questions at this point, right? Cuomo said, I'm the former attorney general. I got a lot of tips and I did a lot of investigations. Cuomo said, frankly, most turn out to be nothing. But when you get a tip, you get a question. Your job is to follow it up and see if there's anything here. That's what this U.S. attorney is doing. That's what he should be doing. What I did at the top of that, just to give people even more confidence, is we'll do our own investigation. And we've got a nationally known investigator checking everything in the program.
David, Andrew Cuomo could say anything he wants. There's a real stink around here, and we know it. And the U.S. attorney has put out subpoenas all over the place and to the, some of the very top friends of Andrew Cuomo. Joe Prococo, his top aide, his so-called his self-identified brother. He named Prococo in his eulogy to his fallen father, Mario Cuomo, who passed this year. And Prococo is of great interest, apparently, to the U.S. attorney. Cuomo is not the same Cuomo. He doesn't have the sort of brash edge right now. I think he knows that this is very dangerous territory. And not only does he have Prococo, but he has Todd Howe, a former aide also at Housing and Urban Development, a lobbyist, a guy who apparently is being questioned by the U.S. attorney at great length. So this is the closest, I think, that you will find coming to the U.S. attorney's office. In the meantime, you have Hillary Clinton saying a most amazing thing, David, saying that when asked, would she appoint this hero, this guy, Preet Bharara, back into the U.S. attorney's office should she become president? She said it's too early. Hillary, cut that out. I mean, that doesn't make an awful lot of sense to me. She acknowledges that he's done good work. But, you know, with the Clintons, you got to worry a little bit. And when they start saying that people, U.S. attorneys who are doing their job, it's too early to tell, especially when you know it's not going to be her choice anyway. It's going to be the most powerful Democrat in the United States, and that's going to be Chuck Schumer. So any political scientist knows it's the senior Democrat in the Senate of the same party as the president who gets to make these, quote, recommendations, which are really nominations. So it's not going to be Hillary. So I'm a little concerned when I heard that, and I think other people might have to be concerned, too, with or saying it. You know, the Clintons have been known to get themselves into trouble. And when you start mucking around with U.S. attorneys, that ain't good.
From there to school budgets, which were voted on this week across New York, almost 98% of those budgets were approved, including the majority of school districts asking for overrides of the state's mandatory property tax cap. The real question, of course, with the funding of schools has always been the formula and whether it's equal.
Well, that's right. In the old days when the Republicans reigned supreme, and they're very close now in the state Senate, but they still have some power, there was always a sort of gimme at the very end in which the suburban districts did better than the urban districts in many ways. Over the years, we've been, as a state, trying to make that up and to make it a little bit more equal. But there's still no question, if your kids go to certain privileged school districts, they're going to do better. And the real question is, do you put extra into those districts which are underperforming? The Assembly, of course, is always for that. The Senate is always for the suburban districts. And there's always a sort of balancing of that. Now, they would deny this, of course, but that's the way it's always gone. And you see here in New York, people valuing education, valuing the education of their kids, and voting for these school budgets. I believe that's a very good sign.
Legislative Gazette political observer Alan Chartok. Thank you. are listening to the Legislative Gazette, a program about New York State government and politics. I'm David Gustina. Clean water advocates in upstate New York have set their sights on keeping lead out of school drinking water. The Legislative Gazette's Dave Lucas reports a coalition of New York public health, environment, and healthy schools advocacy groups have recently banded together as they push state government leaders to take action.
The New York State Department of Health says primary prevention, taking deliberate measures to prevent exposure to lead before it occurs, is the only effective way to protect children and families from lead poisoning. Jackie Cohen is the senior legislative associate at the New York Public Interest Research Group. She says lead particularly threatens children as their bodies absorb the neurotoxin more rapidly than adults, leading to learning disabilities, lower IQ, developmental and behavioral issues.
What we're finding is that there are elevated lead levels in schools across New York State. Recently, in New York alone, school districts in Ithaca, Binghamton, and now New Rochelle have been forced to close off taps, close down drinking fountains and sinks because they found elevated levels of lead in their drinking supply. What groups like NYPERG and other advocates are calling for are measures by the state legislature to ensure that no student has to continue drinking contaminated poisoned water because of lead infrastructure.
Currently, there is no EPA mandate that schools test for lead at the tap. Health advocates want all water taps at schools across New York tested. Claire Barnett, executive director of Healthy Schools Network, says they've laid out a 5-point plan. Mandate that all schools test their water for lead and copper contamination at the tap.
If you don't test, you won't find. You know, you really do have to look, and it's important to look.
Provide safe drinking water if elevated lead levels are in school drinking and cooking water. Tell test results to parents and teachers quickly.
Parents out there who may be slightly alarmed, we urge you to ask to see the lead test. And thank your school for doing the testing and thank them for sharing the results.
Establish a source of funding to pay for remediation such as filters or new pipes and make available an annual report from school water testing by the State Department of Health.
Schools that are on municipal systems, public water supplies like City of Albany, City of Rochester and so forth, really aren't required to test at the tap for contaminants. But it is schools that are on private well water across the state and across the country are required to test at the tap for lead and copper and other contaminants.
Those test results can be accessed through the U.S. EPA website by typing in your zip code. There's a link at WAMC.org. Christopher Gokin, Director of Public Policy with the New York League of Conservation Voters, notes that lead, either from paint or from water, can have a tremendously bad effect on young children.
In Rochester, there was a special education program where every single kid was lead poisoned. And a lot of the kids coming into the school there had elevated lead levels.
Gokin says lead poisoning can have long-term effects.
There's been some studies that show that most of the prison population in the United States has elevated lead levels, if not straight out lead poisoning. So parts of the brain that deal with impulse control in particular seem to be harmed substantially by lead poisoning and elevated lead levels.
Barnett says water testing needs to be stepped up in order to determine how much money needs to be deposited in a remediation fund that could be used to address lead contamination problems as they come to light. The ongoing call to action for healthier and more nutritional school lunches is a call that relies heavily on water.
So you have to be concerned not only what's in the cooking water in the kitchen, but also what's in the water at the tap.
She adds children are more vulnerable to environmental hazards than the adults around them.
They breathe more air per pound of body weight than adults, and they drink more water per pound of body weight than adults. You certainly don't want to send kids to school to do well on all their work, be in school, stay healthy, and achieve to their optimal level, and then along the way, ask them to drink leaded water. Doesn't work very well.
Gokin says activists are calling on lawmakers to take action.
We're working closely with legislative leaders in both houses on a bipartisan effort to make sure that schools test their water for lead. And we hope to get that done before the end of this session. And we want the governor to sign it into law.
For the Legislative Gazette, I'm Dave Lucas.
Saratoga County, New York, has reached a $5.3 million settlement with General Electric over costs relating to relocating its water source due to the dredging work in the Hudson River. One municipality, however, is still pushing ahead with litigation. The Legislative Gazette's Lucas Willard picks up the story.
The Saratoga County Water Authority's action against General Electric began in 2011 due to pollution of the Hudson River caused by GE's PCB dredging operations. Saratoga County had to move its plant to the town of Moreau in the northern portion of the county. Most of the population and customer base, however, is located in the southern portion of the county. On May 11th, the Water Authority and the county, which served as co-plaintiff, reached a settlement with General Electric for $5.3 million. The resolution was approved by the County Law and Finance Committee Wednesday and just needs County Board of Supervisors Chairman Mo Wright's signature at the May meeting.
What's the big expense moving that far north? I mean, you figure that's a huge water system, and it's, we had to put a lot of pipe in the ground because of that.
The Water Authority will also approve the agreement. At Wednesday's agenda session meeting, Water Authority Board Chairman and Waterford Town Supervisor Jack Lawler said the settlement was good news. With dredging work completed on the Hudson last year, GE spokesman Mark Behan said the company was pleased it could reach a settlement with the parties. The company has settled similar cases with other Saratoga County communities.
And we had previously reached settlements with the towns and villages of Waterford and Stillwater, so we really thought this was an appropriate resolution to what, over the last several years, has really become protracted litigation.
The town of Half Moon still has pending litigation over the costs relating to changing its water source. Town Supervisor Kevin Tollison said Half Moon could not reach an agreement with the company at the recent court conference.
We weren't able to settle with GE on any type of arrangement at this point. Negotiations are ongoing, and we would like to resolve the matter if we can, but we are prepared to move forward with litigation and trial if necessary.
Tollison said a trial would likely occur in September, but he is hoping for a resolution before then if possible.
We're eager to get this resolved for our town residents, but we're mindful of the cost of it and would like to resolve it if possible.
Behan said GE will also work toward a resolution.
Well, all of the other parties have now settled, of course, and we remain hopeful as well that a fair and reasonable resolution can be achieved.
For the Legislative Gazette, I'm Lucas Willard.
You are listening to the Legislative Gazette, a program about New York State government and politics. I'm David Gustina. New York Governor Andrew Cuomo announced this week that the state is awarding $1 million each to three colleges whose student-led teams won a competition to develop clean energy projects. As the Legislative Gazette's Allison Dunn reports, one of the winning teams is from Bard College in Dutchess County.
Annandale-on-Hudson-based Bard College will use its $1 million from the Energy to Lead competition for a micro-hydro for macro-impact project. Lori Husted is Sustainability Manager of the Bard Office of Sustainability. She says the timing was right, as the competition was announced just after Bard had completed its purchase of Montgomery Place, which added not only 380 acres to the campus, but two dams along the Sawkill Creek. Husted and others started thinking about whether micro-hydropower, defined as less than 100 kilowatts, could work at these dams and beyond.
You know, there are 6,700 of these non-powered dams across New York State, and we feel that we will find a good place for micro-hydropower at some of them, and maybe it will be on campus and maybe it will be somewhere else. But this is a big deal for New York to figure out how to handle these dams that are getting older and maybe falling apart.
The $3 million competition is part of Governor Cuomo's Reforming the Energy Vision strategy and was administered by the New York State Energy Research and Development Authority. It challenged schools to develop ideas for innovative projects in energy efficiency, renewable energy, or greenhouse gas emission reduction on campus, in the classroom, and in surrounding communities. Here's Husted.
We didn't see this as, maybe just putting a little project in at Bard, we saw it as an opportunity to look at it statewide and look at something in a new way, in sort of a more sustainable way.
The project also includes the launch of an online public information resource called New York Micro Hydro to help others install similar projects throughout the state. Jason Chang, who is finishing his sophomore year, is one of six students on the team.
The best thing that could possibly happen is not things that happen in your lifetime. It's just seeing things that happen in the next generation, things that you started turning into something absolutely amazing. And that's something that I'm really excited to be a part of.
Chang says he has been speaking with his robotics professor about focusing his senior project on the micro hydropower endeavor.
How can we make sure that we optimize these dams to work perfectly? For example, when controlling the angle of these hydroelectric dams, so when the water flows is not that high, we could increase the angle of the dam, the hydroelectrics, the blades, flowing too quickly, providing some sort of algorithm which will determine at which angle to decrease it so that it won't actually damage the blades.
Again, Husted.
You work away in the trenches to chip away at a college's carbon footprint, and then the chance comes along to make a difference for the whole state. And really, these dams are all over the country, so it gets pretty exciting to think about how far this might go.
Husted says BARD aims to reach carbon neutrality by 2035, and micro hydropower could contribute to this goal.
If we are able to put micro hydropower on the Sawkill, it looks like about 2.5 to 3% of our power could be generated there.
SUNY Broome Community College also won the competition, and President Dr. Kevin Drum says the money is for a geothermal learning laboratory.
Primarily, it will be used to provide geothermal heating and cooling for the renovation of one of our oldest buildings on campus, which is our mechanical engineering building. That's one of our original buildings on campus from the early to mid-1950s, so it's horribly energy inefficient, with drafty windows and window air conditioners hanging out of windows all over the place and that sort of thing.
And he describes the application beyond heating and cooling the building.
We will be building in the academic application to mechanical engineering, electrical engineering, geology, environmental science, and our entrepreneurship program, because part of the grant will go to support a green sandbox, if you will, for folks to brainstorm ideas for green energy businesses in the future, to dovetail with our student incubator, which will be opening next spring downtown in concert with Binghamton University.
The third winner is the University at Buffalo's Localizing Buffalo's Renewable Energy Future. In partnership with the City of Buffalo and several not-for-profit and educational partners, the project's goal is to install 100 megawatts of solar power throughout the city and college and university campuses. Collectively, the three winning college projects will mean the equivalent of taking 17,000 cars off the road each year in terms of greenhouse gas emissions.
For the Legislative Gazette, I'm Allison Dunn.
That about does it for this week's show. We had help from the New York State Public Radio Network. For copies, call 1-800-323-9262. That's 1-800-323-9262. Ask for program number 1621 or just listen or podcast on the web at wamc.org. And join us again next week at this same time for more news on New York State government and politics. For the Legislative Gazette, I'm David Gustina.
Statewide distribution for the Legislative Gazette is made possible by New York State United Teachers, representing professionals in education and healthcare, online at nysut.org.